Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Record Rangers podcast. My name's Gavin Berry and I'm delighted to say that I'm joined by the Sunday Mail's chief football writer, Scott McDermott. Scott, we were poking a bit of fun at you when you were off recently, right after the defeat to Celtic. Andy was saying that you'd duck the big issues and you're only here when it's all flowery and it's all positive. Now he's off on holiday and you're the man that's here. I know. I'm not entirely sure. I can say it's all flowery and positive. But, you know, when Andy and I spoke, it was, you know, just before the international break, Rangers 0, Celtic 1. They obviously had that time to sort of assess things, get on the training field, talk about what went wrong against Celtic. Now, if I just look at the three results since then, the St Johnstone game we come back into, Michael Beale, it was must win. St Johnstone 0, Rangers 2, Rangers 1, Betis 0, Rangers 1, Motherwell 0. So on paper, certainly, if you hadn't watched any of those three games, you have to say there's been a reaction. There's been a reaction. But, I suppose there's a big but, they were booed off. Team were booed off despite beating Motherwell on Sunday. I mean, what, glass half full, glass half empty? I mean, where are they now?
Well, listen, if I can read in the room in terms of the Rangers supporters, then I think it's very, very much glass half empty. I've not spoken to many of them whose glass is half full. It's funny, I mean, I remember being at the St Johnstone game a couple of weeks ago, and it was a kind of poor start to the game again. First half wasn't great, apart from Danilo's goal, and me and a couple of other boys in the press box, we were almost kind of half joking, saying, God, Rangers could be this was falling on for the Celtic defeat. Obviously, we were joking, saying, God, Rangers could be the first team to actually get booed off after winning. Mm-hmm. And we were kind of laughing about it as if that was a preposterous notion. But it sounds as if that's exactly what happened at the weekend, which is such a shame, given that there was a real kind of, you genuinely felt as if there was a real feel-good factor last Thursday after the Real Betis game. I mean, I was there that night, and just post-match, I mean, the way the game went, I thought the crowd took a while to get into it. The players took a while to get them into it. Mm-hmm. But, my God, that second half, you felt, God, this could be the, I think I said it in one of the online pieces, that, you know, Michael Beale will be hoping this can be the spark that just ignites the season. And even post-match, speaking to a couple of players, we spoke to the manager after it as well. God, for the first time in a long time, he had a real kind of spring in his step. And it was as if, right, here we go, this is the start of it. Let's go and kick on now. No, it was a massive week. Always going to be a massive week domestically. But it sounds as if that feel-good factor has just been drained in the space of 90 pretty dismal minutes against Motherwell. I haven't seen the whole game. I've only seen highlights and bits and bobs because I was away. But I've certainly read the reaction. You know, I've spoken to people, and I mean, my God, it just sounds like a really, really abject performance, and one that kind of highlights, you know, the big issue here. Certainly in the eyes of supporters, I think. And that is that they don't see any progression with this team. And they can't build any momentum, Gav, or any continuity. And I know injuries have played a part in that. But, I mean, just a wee example for the weekend, like, against Real Betis, Beale went to a kind of 4-2-3-1, mm-hmm. which hasn't really gone with that much. But he decided to go 4-2-3-1 and just played the two wingers. the two real wide men, Sima and Matondo. And it worked for them against Betis. No, the two sitters, the one up front and the two wide men. Now, the context to this is at the start of the season, he didn't seem to want to go with any wide men. Really, it was going to be 4-3-3, narrow.
Narrow, yeah.
No, with Ryan Kent leaving and Sakala leaving. But he went back to it. He played the only real two wide men he's got in Sima and Matondo, and it worked. So he kind of goes with it again against Motherwell on Sunday, albeit he leaves Sima out and plays Scott Wright, which I don't really agree with, but okay, you can handle that. But then but then Matondo gets injured, and it's made for Sima to come on and replace him just to stick to the 4-2-3-1. But instead, he brings John Souter on and changes the entire system, the entire formation. Now, listen, I wasn't at the game, so I've not got a kind of taste of how it was going at that time. No, he obviously felt they had to change shape. I think I've seen a quote saying he wanted to get more control of the game. But just feels like all momentum has been lost after Wednesday night, after Thursday night, for a variety of reasons. And it kind of feels as if they're back to square one again ahead of the Livingston game.
I was watching comments from Neil Lennon the other night. He was actually sort of, you know, when there's been all this sort of negativity, I mean, he was sort of flipping it a bit more, sort of the glass half full, and saying that Michael Beale was being too negative after it, you know, like these comments. And I mean, he was obviously very honest, Michael Beale, and what he said, you know, was where he had a go. And but I mean, you've seen games like this, and that was the point that Neil Lennon was making, particularly sort of after European nights. You know, sometimes you just get games that are a slog. I mean, you know, we've seen it during all, you know, you get grinding out wins. Is the reason this is different just because it's become the norm? Is that the problem?
It's the context of it all. You're right, Gavin. Listen, we know the game. We know post-European hangovers are pretty common. And as you say, ordinarily, you come off a big European win, you go to the weekend domestically and win 1-0, and everybody thinks, listen, it wasn't great, but 3 points were all that mattered. And ultimately, the 3 points is all that matters, but it's the context, it's the recent history, it's the kind of feel around the place. You know, they're already 4 points behind Celtic. As I touched on earlier, the fans want to see performances, they want to see progression, they want to see examples of, you know, how this team's going to play under Michael Beale. And as I say, just after the Betis game, it was there for them to really kick on and go and produce a good performance. Listen, they might still only beat Motherwell 1-0 or 2-0 because Motherwell in decent form themselves.
Yeah.
But they had to show a performance. I think it's the level of performance that's creating this kind of worrying apathy now between, you know, with the Rangers, in terms of the Rangers crowd towards the manager. And that's a big worry for him. I mean, listen, you do appreciate his honesty post-match, and I'm glad they didn't come out and try and sugarcoat it, because that would have just upped punters even more. But it does mean, as I say, goes into Wednesday, almost kind of back to the drawing board, pressure on again, because it's a cup final and it's another must-win game for them.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
But that is the thing, you look at the run of games, and we're talking about how after the Celtic defeat, they needed a reaction. Now, if there had been a slip-up in any of them, maybe not the Betis game. I mean, had they drawn the Betis game, you know, you'd maybe get away with that because of who it was. But look, they've gone and won that game. So, I mean, the flip side is if they beat Livingston, you know, and they're in the semi-final of the Cup, you know, and then, you know, they beat Aberdeen at home on Saturday, I mean, you're then talking, you know, it's then five wins in a row.
I know.
You could have the League Cup in the trophy cabinet in December, a trophy they've not won since 2011. So, I mean...
I know, you're right.
People don't seem to be looking at it that way. I'm just sort of trying to play devil's advocate here.
No, I think, after the Celtic game, in the international break, if they'd come back and said, look, you're going to win five games in the bounce, you're going to be in the League Cup semi, and you're going to have 6 points, start off with 6 out of 6 in your Europa League group, of course they would have bitten your hand off for it. And as you say, that might still be the case. And listen, I think if they do achieve that and get to the next international break, I think that will be a time for fans to say, well, wait a minute, it's maybe not as bad as we're making out here. No, we're maybe going a bit OTT. But the flip side, again, to play devil's advocate to your kind of point, is that you're looking at that team just now and how they're playing domestically.
Yeah.
And it sounds a ridiculous thing to say, but I mean, I talked to somebody last night about it, but right now it's difficult to see Rangers going to St Mirren, for example, twelve o'clock on a Sunday, with the injuries and the issues and that. No, it's going to be off the back of a trip to Cyprus.
Yeah, yeah.
It's actually hard to see Rangers going to Paisley and winning. Now, that's an incredible thing to say, and that might be proved ridiculous, if they come back from Cyprus and go to St Mirren and win 3-0. But we all know how difficult it is to go there and get a result at the moment. St Mirren away is almost like the way Livy away was a couple of years ago, when just every team found it really difficult.
Yeah.
They make it a really tough struggle for any team going there. I mean, the record this season has been fantastic so far. So that's the worry. Listen, as you say, if Rangers get out of this, having won every game, sitting pretty at the top of the Europa League group in the League Cup semis, it'll be a really successful chunk of games for Michael Beale, that kind of block. But at the moment, it's almost it's hanging in the balance. And that's purely because of performances on the pitch and the feeling amongst the support of it.
Yeah, well, it's funny you should say that, because as I was talking to you about that run of fixtures and I'm looking at them thinking, well, it could be, I mean, it wouldn't be the biggest shock in the world if they got 7 wins in a row. I'm looking at the odds, like they're 1-8 to beat Livy and they're 1-4 to beat Aberdeen, and, their odds on, I think, to win over in Cyprus. And then I got to that St Mirren game, and again, looking at the odds they are, I mean, St Mirren are 71 at home, but as I was saying it, and you were talking about getting to the international break, I think that is the last game before the international break. Now, it was almost identical scenario with Van Bronckhorst, wasn't it? I think it was going into, the winter break, was it not? St Mirren, again, it was St Mirren, and they couldn't get that win. And I was playing that game in my head as I'm talking to you, thinking, God, Paisley, is that where it all unravels? Because it could be. But when you get to that situation in this game to game, I think we've spoken about that already this season. We got to that stage with Giovanni Van Bronckhorst where you were just delaying the inevitable. Yeah. And is that all that's happening now? How do you see it playing out?
I don't think it's quite at the level Gio was at getting into that St Mirren game, but I do think there is an element of Michael Beale treading water a wee bit. Do you know what I mean? I mean, you've said it there, game by game. And I know managers love that kind of mantra, but it's always a worry when it's like every game's a must win. Do you know what I mean? Every game he needs a big performance. I mean, this is the game where it's got to kick on. I mean, I know there's pressure at Rangers, every week of the season, but to live with that, there's no breathing space for him. There's no wriggle room at all. And we've spoken about it on here before. So it's not just because of the Celtic game, it's because of the Killie game and the opening day of the season and how they started. They've obviously had problems since then with injuries and the new signings, haven't kicked on. I think when you're at that point where it does feel like your head's just above water, it's a worrying time, and that's why you need a couple of big performances, you need a couple of big results to get yourself out of that and just give yourself a bit of breathing space again.
Yeah, yeah. Aberdeen, obviously, Saturday. Aberdeen Saturday, that was a game that you were thinking at the time when Aberdeen was struggling a bit there, but they've got a big result at the weekend.
Yeah.
Now, Michael Beale is going to be under the same pressure as Van Bronckhorst was under when Aberdeen came to town last season. Remember, that was the game where Michael Beale appears in the stand looking over him. I see a lot of people now referring to things like that now. Do you think, I see a lot of people now sort of digging him up and criticising him. Do you think people are now sort of, there's a bit of revisionism now here in terms of the Beale appointment? Looking back, you know, whether maybe, you know, there was a lot of sort of positivity about it. I think people are now looking back and saying, oh, in hindsight, he was never the right choice. He was inexperienced. Look what he done to Gio. Do you see a bit of that?
Yeah, I see a bit of that. But, I mean, that's just punters, isn't it? I mean, that's, if you read the message boards and stuff, you're always going to get that. Listen, if we're going to look back with hindsight, I mean, was Michael Beale the obvious choice? I mean, I don't think I was too sure at the time. I mean, I'd like to think I said at the time that I probably didn't think he'd done enough as a manager, not to merit the Rangers job. For all the time he'd actually been a manager himself, albeit, you know, everything that we'd heard about him as a coach was glowing. In terms of the kind of praise he was getting for players that had worked with him and people from within the game. But I do think it was a risky appointment at the time, as I say, just given that lack of experience at the, you know, at the coalface as being the number one. As I say, I think certain people have already made their minds up. I think, you know, certain people have already made their minds up that he's not the right man. I think the big disappointment is there was that excitement when he came in, and that was largely down to the style of play that fans were convinced he was going to bring in. No, they believed, they'd bought into this idea that Michael Beale was the brains behind the Steven Gerrard team, and, you know, it was going to be this Beale ball when he came in, and, you know, you're going to see a whole new style. And listen, whether you like it or not, that's just not happened. And I like Michael Beale as a guy. I think he's a great coach. Whether he's going to be a brilliant manager for Rangers, I'm afraid the jury's still out. But I think that's the one real disappointment that he can't really have an argument with, is that, you know, he's had time to implement a proper playing style. And, you know, you think of the other, and I hate kind of going across the city, but you think even Ange Postecoglou came in. Yeah. You think of even now Brendan Rodgers coming back and actually changing Celtic style again into his own. I mean, you can see signs of it right from the off. Mm. And you can pretty much see, no, I think you pretty much saw progression. Certainly did with Postecoglou's team. They went on and won two titles. And I think gradually you're seeing it with Rodgers' second team since he's come back. So I think that's the one area where Rangers fans do feel a bit let down. You know, they expected to see a change in style, a philosophy, a system, whatever you want to call it, and that just hasn't materialised. And the other thing as well is, just on Beale, that you cannot get away from, is that at this moment in time, and managers bang on about recruitment all the time, you know, to sign nine, ten players in the summer, and really, you know, let's be brutally honest, only one of them, Jack Butland, has been up to scratch so far. Now, listen, two or three others, maybe more, might be taking a bit more time to settle in Glasgow, settle into Scottish football. We all know that, you know, sometimes it does take players longer than others, but there is no getting away from the fact that one summer signing, and that's a goalkeeper, has lived up to expectations. And the others, you know, the others in the main have toiled. And for any manager, when your recruitment goes like that early on, it's going to be really, really tough. And that's why, you know, we're having a pop at Michael Beale, and obviously he's had a major hand in signing the players, but these players that he's brought in for, you know, decent amounts of money haven't done it for him so far. You know, he'll almost feel let down. I think he would never admit it, but he almost feel let down at some of those performances. Because ultimately, I mean, I've heard punters saying in the last couple of days, I mean, you let Colak and Sakala go. No, are Dessers and Seema any better? Yes. Are Dessers and Lammers any better than what those two were providing? Not at the moment, no.
But that is the irony, is that when he came in, he did what he managed to do, what Rangers were crying out for, was put a string of results together. I mean, his record was good.
Yeah.
So the recruitment must be a big factor in it. You know, he was doing well with the players that he inherited. Okay. Exactly. It's a bit easier when the pressure's off. I mean, if we look to the win over Celtic at the end of the season, as impressive as that was, obviously the league was over and you need to take that into account. But there was an energy about them, and that's why there was that anticipation. So
yeah,
so much of it must be down to recruitment, but he knew the players he needed for that style.
Yeah, the signings haven't been good enough. I mean, there's no getting away from that. And behind closed doors, Michael Beale will know that. He's no daft. I mean, of course, in public, he's got to try and back them and he's got to believe that, you know, others will come good. But at the moment, there is just no getting away from the fact that the signings so far haven't been up to scratch. And that's played a major part, because you're right. No, before the season, before a ball was kicked, getting into that Kilmarnock game, there was a real excitement about what these new guys were going to bring. I think there was an acceptance in the summer that there needed a refresh and there needed a revamp. I don't know any Rangers fan that didn't believe that. But if you're going to do that, and you're going to make a raft of new signings, I think you need 60-70% of those signings to work out. So in Rangers' case, that means they needed, no, six or seven of those players that he brought in to hit the ground running. I know I keep going back to Postecoglou, but when he brought in that raft of new players when he came in, listen, he had one or two that didn't work out. No, Adeguchi, James McCarthy, people like that.
Yeah.
No, even going forward, like Kobayashi and people, no, there was always going to be ones that didn't work out.
Yeah.
But he had like six or seven that just hit the ground running. Rio Hatate, Matt O'Reilly, Maeda, Kyogo, Carter Vickers, Jota. I mean, these guys just came in and took to it right away. And Rangers, with the change Rangers needed in the summer, that had to happen. And as I say, there's no getting away from the fact that these signings haven't produced so far. No enough of them have produced. And for Beale to survive, he's going to need that to change pretty rapidly.
Another change that seems to have been made in the summer, and I have to say, it's slipped under the radar, but just I was reading on the Daily Record website yesterday, kind of caught me by surprise a wee bit, was that when it said Steven Gerrard was looking at taking Jim McAllister over to Saudi Arabia with him. He was a kit man who worked under Jimmy Bell and then replaced Jimmy Bell. I didn't realise he'd gone, but obviously that was another change he'd been made in the summer. I see a lot of fans sort of talking about it. I'm not saying he's going to make a difference on the part in terms of he's not going to score a hat-trick or make Dessers a better player, but I see a lot of punters talking about just the fact that I think Jim McAllister was a boyhood Rangers fan. He obviously had a good career played with Morton, Hamilton, and teams like that. Had a spell down at Blackpool. I just wonder about in terms of, I mean, maybe that could be a bigger influence than, you know, when you see the way people talk about Jimmy Bell, you know, obviously was there for so many years. I wonder if maybe players do like to have a presence like that around the dressing room. Maybe could someone like that be a sort of influence? You know, I don't even know who's replaced him now. I just, as I say, the story just seemed to come out of the blue yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, I was the same. I mean, listen, I do think it's a bit of a worry, because I know how popular Jim McAllister was in the dressing room among players. And I also know how popular he was under Jimmy Bell, or what Jimmy Bell thought of him and what his family thought of him. So, see, I'm not sure of the circumstances, but it's sad that he's left the club. And I think you're right. Listen, it sounds a bit cliched and a bit old-fashioned, but...
Yeah.
You need Rangers men within the club. No, you need these guys behind the scenes. That's the way it's always been. And it does feel from the outside, and maybe people at the club will dispute this, but it does feel like the outside, like, that has been gradually lost over the years. And I think they have brought a kind of outside or somebody from the outside in, you know, to do the kit and stuff. And as you say, these people behind the scenes are the fabric of the club. And listen, you've been at Rangers before, and you know how important these people are behind the scenes. And I definitely think there's an argument for saying that has been eroded slightly over the years. So if that is the case, and he's going to Saudi or whatever, then I think it's a big loss. As you say, it might not seem it from the outside.
Yeah.
But I think players will be disappointed with that, for instance, to lose someone like that. And I do think you need people like that behind the scenes.
Well, you've read quotes from players like Ali McCoist or Ian Durant over the years, and you always think of them referring to people like, you know, Tiny in the kitchen, you know, and then there's women in the laundry room, and then there used to be Peter Jacobs at the front door, you know, all these, you know, there was Laura, who was the manager's secretary for all those years, those kind of figures, you know, and Jimmy Bell would have come under that, obviously, come in that category. There's so many of them, and you maybe don't realise the importance of these people, you know. I'm sure all clubs have it.
And listen, those are the roles that shouldn't change, those people should be there for 15, 20, 25 years. That's what we mean by the fabric of the club. They're not roles. There are other roles at football clubs that you understand will change all the time. Yes. You know, and it's always evolving. But these kind of key jobs, as you say, might not seem that important from the outside. But honestly, if you asked players or indeed managers at Rangers over the years, they'll say these people are the real heartbeat of the club. And I think when they're right, and when you've got people like that, it does have a positive impact on everything else that happens at the club. It might seem ridiculous that you're talking about kit men and kitchen staff having any impact on what happens on the pitch, but you'd be surprised because a happy club behind the scenes normally means good results. So listen, I don't think it's helping if you're losing guys of Jim McAllister's ilk, in terms of the feeling that he had for the club, and you're not really replacing it, then it would be a bit of a worry, I think, going forward.
Yeah, I suppose for him personally, right enough. I mean, if you get a chance to go to Saudi, at least it's not so bad that he's landed something, another job in football from his point of view.
Of course, but I'm sure he would much rather be at Rangers.
Yeah.
And that's the whole point. It's you don't want to lose these kind of people to the football club.
Yeah. Great. All right. Well, Scott, listen, thanks a lot for your time. Thanks for joining us. We'll see how it goes against Livingston Wednesday, Aberdeen on Saturday, and then Andy will be back next week. And hopefully the three of us can catch up.
Brilliant. Cheers, Gav.
Thanks. Bye-bye.